So that's what I did this week. So the response was Living a Purposeful Life. That's the title of my lecture. Any questions? So I happened to read a little bit, and so Srila Prabhupada said that the purpose of the life of human life, the purpose of life in general, is ananda, or happy. He said everyone knows that that is actually the real underlying purpose of life, is to experience happiness, because it's in line with our nature. We look for happiness, we thrive on happiness. We do many things in order to bring about happiness. So when you see how everyone has that common factor, everyone's looking for some form of happiness. But Prabhupada used the word ananda. He didn't say happiness. Ananda means that a kind of joyful life that is filled with activities, not just the idea of happiness. Well, happiness comes when there's activities, when there's relationships, when there is successes in the execution of our activities. So in Krishna consciousness, we might define that there are many purposes in the execution of Krishna consciousness that lead to happiness, or many activities that are purposeful. They have meaning. Why? Because they're meant to serve the Lord, they're meant to please the Lord. So they have a purpose. And when they bring happiness, then you might say life is purposeful. Mm-hmm. I found the purpose of life to make Krishna happy. If Krishna is happy, because I'm part of Krishna, I'm also happy. So happiness, usually, those who try to look for happiness never find it. But those who try to serve, they find happiness. Because when you try to look for happiness, you don't really know what you're looking for, because it's something that's not something that you can define. It's an experience. But there are things that you can say that bring about happiness, and then there are things that look like they bring about happiness, but they don't. Such as sense gratification. Sense gratification looks like it can bring happiness, and initially what it does is gives you a relief from the suffering that you're undergoing, or the boredom that you experience. Because most people in the world are not so much not happy, they're bored. Life in the material world is boring. It's like a black and white movie you watched 100 times. And it's the same actors, the same conclusions. Because nothing changes in the material world. It's just the people who do the activities change, but the activities are the same. And it's all about somehow or other satisfying the body and mind through contact with the external environment. And different, nobody's happy. So no one understands the purpose of life because they don't know what is actually life. But purposeful life means to perform activities and in relationships to others who are also doing the same activities that bring you closer to God. When Srila Prabhupada was in Atlanta, Georgia, he was giving a class to many Sankirtan devotees who had been, book distributors had come from all over America to be with Prabhupada. And it was a huge, the temple was packed out. They couldn't even fit enough people. The people were outside the windows looking in because it was so packed out. So Sankirtan armies had come from all over the U.S. to be with Prabhupada. And the questions and answers were quite lively. And Prabhupada not only gave a class, but he spent about an hour answering questions, which he never does. If he answers questions, most of his lectures Prabhupada never asked for questions. But in some of the lectures he did, and then usually there was one or two questions and things just sort of ended there. But this time it was on for an hour. And then one Sankirtan devotee, he knew Prabhupada was going to answer the way he was thinking. This was his idea. Prabhupada's going to say, so he, and he said in a very Sankirtan way, Srila Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Of course we know that, but we want to hear it again. And so, Prabhupada, you know, when you try to second guess a great soul, you're always wrong. Because Krishna's in the heart, and he makes sure your answer is not given. Just to show you don't know so much. So, he was thinking Prabhupada's going to say, distribute my books. And Prabhupada said that so many times, if you want to please me, distribute books. So it was not like something Prabhupada never said before. But when he said, when he was asked his question, Prabhupada said, what pleases the spiritual master the most is if you love Krishna. That was his answer. And that was the ultimate answer, because that's why the spiritual master is there. He's meant to somehow or other bring our life in connection with Krishna to a point where we actually start to develop natural affection and attachment to Krishna. So much so that everything else in life becomes meaningless. And that's actually the platform of what we might say the purpose of life is to serve Krishna and develop love for Krishna through service of Krishna. Well, it becomes pretty easy to figure it out, but to get there, then you might say, well, is there any intermediate purposes that I have to, you know, achieve in order to get to that point? Yeah, there is. There's a lot of them. And that is, you have to associate with devotees. Like, people ask me questions a lot of the time. I give an online class. And I know some of these devotees don't have much devotee association, or some even hardly any. And they keep asking me different questions about why they can't make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And I keep telling them the same answer. Associate with the devotees. Develop affection for the devotees. Develop friendship with the devotees. Develop service in relationship to the devotees. Share Krishna consciousness with the devotees. I said, if you do that, then you won't have any more questions to ask. Because all your answers are right there. So that leads ultimately to love of God. Because everything is being the whole life. When you look at life, you think, what's the most important thing in life? People who have money, are they happy? Many of them are not. Even if they're filthy rich, they're always in anxiety. Or even if they spend their money, they do it when it doesn't really benefit them or anybody else. They're obsessed in getting more money, but still they can't find happiness in the position they have or the money they achieve. So you see that in some of the most miserable people in the world are the richest people in the world, or the most famous people in the world. So you can see, well, that's not the platform of happiness, because we can see that these people have achieved what they think is the goal of life, and still they haven't achieved the essence of life, which is happiness. And you can tell when a person's not happy. All you have to do is look at them. You can tell when a person is happy, and you can tell when a person is not happy. It's easy to see. Because there's something about them that resonates within them that if you're happy, it comes to the forefront. It comes to the face, it comes to the body, it comes to everything. But when that's not there, then you can say, oh, we hope you make it. So, but then what is that thing in life that is the most important thing in life? It's only one word. Relationships. That's it. When you have wonderful relationships with other living entities, you're happy. Even in the material world. That is the basis of happiness. And everyone looks for that. They look for it in marriage. They look for it in friendship. They look for it in social events. They look for it in so many different ways. But because people in the material world are motivated by their own self-interest, when they take these opportunities to experience happiness, they have the wrong mood. The mood is, give me happiness. But then, when they have that mood, they're looking, they expect from the outside to come in. And therefore, in trying to establish relationships, it's selfish. It's about getting something. But of course, relationships is about getting something. But how to get it is not in the mood of trying to get it. It's in the mood of giving. So those who give actually get. And even though if they don't want to get, they'll get anyway. Because the mood of giving is the nature of the souls in the relationship. So those who serve others or try to please others or try to do things for the benefit of others, even in the material sense, they're happy. Because when another person, because all living entities are connected. We're not separate. We might be separate bodies or separate families or separate nations, cultures. There's so many divisions within the human society. But there's a connecting force that supersedes that. We're all spirit souls. And we're all looking for happiness. Everybody is. Whether it's, well, even the demons are looking for happiness, but they're doing it in such a way as they're causing trouble to others, and they think that's how they can get happy. But a materialist is thinking, what can I get out of this? Why should I enter into this relationship? Why should I go here and experience this activity? What kind of happiness will I get? But devotees don't think like that, because they know that's not the root or the, what we say, the way to achieve happiness. The way to achieve happiness is think how to make others happy. That's the way to achieve happiness. When you think how to make other people happy, especially in a society of devotees, because devotees are connected to Krishna, and because devotees are connected to Krishna through their life, Krishna is also happy when you try to make other devotees happy. And when you do that, then Krishna is happy, and automatically there's a happiness you experience, even if you don't want it. Can't help it. I'm getting happiness, and it's too much. I can't handle it. I'm getting drunk on happiness. But that's the experience. So, of course, we say when relationships take the form of affection, then that relationship becomes really close. Then two people become one. It's not like there's two separate persons anymore. When two people live in such a way as to live for the happiness of each other, there's only one person living. Because they don't see any difference between each other. Each is working for the benefit of the other, therefore each one is working for their own benefit at the same time. That's the nature of relationships. But you don't find that very, because the material world is designed in the self, that everyone thinks that happiness is an external affair of achievements or getting or doing. So they say that in the mode of ignorance, a person will think, if I can get something, I can do something, I can be something. That's ignorance. If I can get something, then I can do something, and I can be something. The mode of passion is, if I can do something, I can get something and I can be something. Mode of goodness is if I can be something, then I can do something, then I can get something. Same threes, but changed around in different modes. You see how the difference. But a devotee acts in, at least in the mode of goodness, if I can be something. What can I be? I can be a servant to others. I can live my life somehow or other to be an example for how to live life and at the same time serve others. And the devotee doesn't think, well, just like a devotee will think, well, a wrong type of thinking is, well, if I can do something spiritual for that person, then that's good. But the devotee doesn't think like that. Even if I can do something material for that person, he thinks like that. If a devotee is sick, can I help them? If the devotee needs some money, can I help them? If the devotee needs somebody to talk to, can I help them? If the devotee just wants to associate, can I take my time and do that, so give that association? The devotees don't make this distinction between material and spiritual because they see everything in the spiritual context. That if it's in relationship, it's based on the individual's happiness, and therefore it's based on the soul's existence. Because the body and the mind don't have happiness. Body and the mind is just a means to, by which happiness comes and goes. But it's the soul, you, the person, is actually experiencing life through the body, through the mind, through the senses, through the intelligence. So even if we do something for someone or serve someone, even in a material way, it's actually within the context of what we say. Therefore, Prabhupada was talking to one priest from, they were in Melbourne, in Australia. And Prabhupada was describing that devotees have all good qualities. And Prabhupada said, yes, they have all good qualities. There's a list in the Bhagavatam. And he turns to his disciple, find that list. And then we know there's a list. It's 26 qualities of a devotee. And then he starts to read the list. And the first quality is a devotee is kind. First quality. Prabhupada said this is the most important quality. Devotees don't like to see anyone suffer. And if they can do something to relieve the suffering of another person, that they consider that their good fortune. Just like the tradition of India is quite interesting. The culture of India in its inception, or in its actual indigenous way of being expressed, is that there's no word called thank you. Nobody says thank you. Why? Because when someone does something for someone and that person says back thank you, that person will feel bad. I'm not doing it because I want to get something from you. I'm doing it because I want to make you happy or please you or to fulfill a particular need that you have. So when you say thank you, they call it breaking the relationship. You understand the point? That the person who's doing it is the person that is actually getting all the benefit. And so he should be saying, thank you for letting me serve you. And that's the culture. That's the actual. If you give me a chance that I can serve you, I'm grateful. I'm thankful. So when someone who gets something says thank you, the person thinks, what is it? You know, he just broke the relationship. So of course we do that now, and even in India they do that. But that is the ancient culture, how they used to relate to each other. That word, that was never there. And you won't even find that in the Indian language. More than they say now, what is the word they use for thank you is, I forgot the word. It's something similar, but it's not. We say dhanyavad. Dhanyavad, right? What is it?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, okay. He's hiding behind the pole. Okay, so yeah, so dhanyavads, right? That means thank you or something like that. But now it becomes a culture all around the world that it's so if you don't say thank you, you're ungrateful. Where the other connection or the inception of the culture is that the person who's doing the activity is the person who's actually benefiting it. Because I get a chance to serve you. That's my good fortune. So, in that idea, then relationships actually build to such an extent that one cannot even see the difference. I mentioned this before. One cannot even see the difference. Just like it says that Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur and Ramachandra Kaviraj were like two souls in one body. Two souls in one body. They had such a close relationship with each other that practically they were like they were inseparable, and therefore they only lived to serve each other and to associate with each other. That's the kind of a relationship that makes life wonderful. We can have that because Krishna's the center. Why is Krishna the center? Because Krishna is the foundation of all relationships. So as one develops a relationship with Krishna, automatically, because everyone else is connected to Krishna automatically, not through the external features, but through the spiritual essence, then everyone has a relationship with everyone else. Therefore, it says, a great soul, when they see someone happy, they feel happy. And when they see someone unhappy, they feel unhappy. Not because they're unhappy, because they empathize with another person's situation. Mm-hmm. So that's bhakti. So the purpose of life is to be happy. And here's how you can become happy. When you serve, the more you serve others and Krishna, the more you will find happiness. Because one of the things that you gain by serving others is you forget about your own problems. Yeah, it's like that. You start to forget about your... When you take on other persons, of course, you have to balance your life in such a way as that you're strong enough to help others. You can't help, they say, you can't help another person unless you help yourself first. So what does it mean to help yourself? Take care of yourself, spiritually and material. Do the basics. Like I was preaching in America many years ago. And I met one lady, and her whole life was to help people who were on drugs, who were alcoholics, people who were, you know, down and out in society. But then I was talking to her and I was looking at her and I could see she wasn't happy. Because she spent all of her time helping others and she forgot about herself. So much so that she neglected her own personal needs. And therefore, what she was doing was she was feeling good about the idea she was helping others, and it was her form of sense gratification. In other words, her sense gratification was the feeling that I'm helping others. I'm a good person. You see the point? But she was neglecting herself because she was attached to this idea to help so many people. But at the same time, she wasn't even effectively helping people because she was going down personally. She neglected her health, she neglected her own personal needs, like that. So to help others is the goal of life, to serve others is the goal of life. The Prabhupada said it's called paropaka, he uses that example, that word. Paropaka means to do good for others. He says this is the basis of our movement. Our movement is guided by this principle of paropaka. trying to do good for others. And of course, we understand, and Prabhupada makes the point, the best thing you can do for others is try to give them Krishna. That's the best thing you can do for others. But then again, you have to have Krishna yourself, to some degree. But whatever degree you have Krishna, share that, and then Krishna will grow also. If you have 10% Krishna conscious and you share that 10% with others, then your 10% will also grow into a larger percentage. Because as you share, you also grow. Spiritual life is like that. Material life is the opposite. If you have something and you give it away, it goes down. If you have money and you give it, then it becomes less. If you have, some material things and you give them, it becomes less. But Krishna consciousness, the more you give it, the more it actually grows on into you and within you, then you have more to give. When Krishna sees that and he becomes pleased that he gives you more intelligence, more abilities, more facilities, that you can use more of your time, energy, and intelligence to serve. Because Krishna supplies all of that. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita, I give you, I am the ability in all living beings. I am the intelligence of the intelligent. I give knowledge, I give remembrance. Even if you want to forget me, I give you that also. Krishna is everything. But when Krishna sees that devotees are serving each other, there's an old story, there's one, it's called a, I forgot the name of this, there was a Christian monastery somewhere in Europe. And the monastery was flourishing. There were many monks, brothers there. People were coming, and the monastery was growing, and people from the outside were coming and having a nice spiritual experience when they were coming. So the monastery grew for many decades. And then finally, something changed, and all of a sudden, the opposite started to enter. Less people came, some of the monks left. Gradually the whole thing started to just gravitate down, down, down. Till there was only 6 months monks left in the whole monastery and people were hardly coming. So, there was some word that a rabbi was coming in the area. So the monks got together and they were concerned. We used to have a very flourishing, wonderful, but look at us now. So maybe we can get some advice on what we can do to bring it back. So they came to the abbot, the head of the monastery, and told him it. And they said, please go meet this rabbi. He's considered to be one of the most important rabbis in the Jewish tradition. He's quite knowledgeable. Ask him about our situation, what we can do. So the abbot thought, all right. So he made his arrangements, met the rabbi, and they were talking. And finally he brought up the question. Then he explained the situation to the rabbi, and he asked for an answer. The rabbi thought for a minute. He didn't answer him right away. And he was very thoughtful, contemplative. And at one point he said, one of those brothers in your monastery is the chosen person by God. He is the enlightened one. And then the next question was, who? There's only 6 of them. And the rabbi says, I cannot say, but I know for sure one of them is the enlightened person. So The abbot leaves and he goes back. Now the monks are all excited. They come to see the abbot. They want to hear what the rabbi said. And so they're all ready. And the abbot says, well, he didn't give me a direct answer, but he did say, one of you is the enlightened person sent by God. And so they all looked at it, started looking at each other. And then And then the different thoughts that came into their mind, well, yeah, Brother John, he complains a lot, but he works hard. And, you know, Brother Michael, you know, he criticizes, but he's right. And then Brother Simon, well, you know, he sleeps a lot, but he's a nice person. So they're all, you know, starting to look at the good qualities of each other. And they're not sure which one is the enlightened one. So then they just start serving each other because they don't want to make a mistake of missing who's that enlightened one. So they start serving each other and doing things for each other in a very regular way. And after some time, the monastery starts growing again. People start coming back, and then more monks join, and the place starts flourishing. It's called an archetype. Archetype is a typical presentation of a feature that you want to understand. So here was the thing that as soon as they started to look at each other in a different way and started to see each other as an object of their service, he might be the enlightened one. Even the enlightened one was doing it. So then soon as that happened, so this is actually how spiritual life develops. When that service mood extends not just to Krishna, not just to the Guru, not just to the devotees, but just to everyone. When everyone has that mood to serve, even the non-devotees, when you see the non-devotees, you also think, what can I do that might inspire the non-devotees to become more Krishna conscious, or something that I can do? So therefore, an advanced devotee, or not advanced, but a devotee who has knowledge will see every moment is an opportunity for service. Every moment is an opportunity for service. So this is the purpose of life, is to serve, and to serve in such a way as to please the object of your service. So you have to sometimes know how to please, because sometimes we try to serve, but we're not sure on how that service should be performed. And if we make these mistakes, then we might be doing the opposite. So a little bit of knowledge is required. But basically, Prabhupada gave us this nectar of instructions. And in the fourth verse, he explains, so he says, I have established these temples all around the world to bring the devotees together to experience the six loving exchanges between devotees, which are mentioned in the fourth verse of Nectar of Instructions. Six loving exchanges. He said, this is the purpose of me establishing temples. The devotees can associate and have these six loving exchanges, which is the basis of the principle of Krishna consciousness. So we don't always go to the temple. But temple is one feature of our spiritual life. Even we can do it in our homes or in our societies outside. When we gather in smaller groups in the homes, or when we gather in programs outside, that same mood, when it's there, it becomes very, very pleasing. Very pleasing. And everyone is trying to serve. That's a proactive thing. It's not something that is like, well, if I get a chance, I'll do it. If it comes my way, I'll do it. No. You gotta look for it. You gotta find ways to serve others. Think of ways, even trick others by serving them. There's one girl, she's in our Denver temple in America. She's a pujari. She's almost 80 years old, 77. And every day she takes the offering, some of the offerings that she gets being a pujari, along with some books. And throughout the day, when she's not doing pujari work, she just goes and talks to people and gives them a gift. Here's some prasadam. Here's a book. And she'll talk to the non-devotees and try to inspire them by taking a book or telling them something about Krishna consciousness. So that's all she does, aside from her pujari work. She just goes around talking to people. And everybody loves her because that's all she does. She's just thinking about how to give Krishna consciousness like that. So that's easy. It's not hard to do. But what's hard to do is to set up the environment where this and these activities can actually manifest. Jai Sisi Panchatattva Ki Jai. So yeah, Kadambakana Maharaj used to say in many of his lectures, how many families in this congregation? He would say, and they would give a number. All right. Then they'd say maybe, 35. That means you can have 35 different programs every one day after another. But what about my work? What about resting? What about taking a break? Don't worry. If you start doing these programs every day, you won't want a break. you'll just think, if there's a break, I don't want it. So he would say, each household can do a program one day a month, and if you do it, you have 30, of course 26, the Sunday you come here. And then you have programs, and then the devotees can associate with you together, can have, practically speaking, can have opportunities to take prasadam. Taking prasadam is a very spiritually and very, what we say, interpersonal relationship. And Prabhupada was asked, some devotees like to serve prasadam, some devotees like to eat prasadam. Prabhupada said, what's better? Prabhupada said, they're the same. No difference. One wants to give Krishna, the other one wants to accept Krishna. Krishna is the medium. No difference. So this is how Krishna consciousness works. It's based on this principle of our identity as eternal servants. And when we extend that mood to everything and everyone, then life becomes nice. Well, you have to practice that. It's not easy. Because we're always thinking, what am I getting? What is it about me? Nobody understands me. I don't even understand me. And they go to somebody and pay $50. Can you tell me what is about me? It's called a psychiatrist. And that's because people are absorbed in themselves so much that they become so neurotic. Neurotic means, it's a disease called neurosis. And that one is just absorbed in their own life that they can't see anything else. Okay, so I'll stop. Any criticisms? Questions? Yes, was it Danilo? Danilo?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. On the topic of giving Krishna to others, being our life, Maharaj, what would you say to a person that didn't get so much, let's say, goods in life, and the person is not so satisfied, so it's hard for a person to give.
Yeah.
And how can such a person come to a stage that not wanting too much for himself, herself, but be satisfied giving Krishna to others?
Well, that's hard. When a person is trained and neglected in life, they say a person who is neglected in life will also grow up to neglect others. A person who is abused in their in life in their youth will be abuser when they grow up. So they internalize their early part of their life and they become like that. They develop that type of nature or the way that they experience life. So they need someone who is really kind to them, that can help them and gradually bring them out of that. By showing them, by example, how to live. Somebody who is not, you can't really preach to a person like that because they can't hear. But all you can do is show kindness. Like what we used to do in New Vrindavan, when I was there for many years, we lost people. They stopped coming to the temples. So we would always preach, well, you know, you're in Maya. You're not coming to the temple. The deity is here. It's your deity. And that even chased people farther away. So then we thought, this is not going to work. This is not the psychology for inspiring people to come forward. So what we would do, we'd go knock on their door and then say, "Hello, got some time? I want to talk to you. Can I help you clean the house? What are you doing today? Is there something I can help you with?" Or you just sort of make friends on a very basic and start talking. And then you start becoming a friend again. And then you don't even ask them to come to the temple. You just leave and then they come to the temple. Because you showed some kindness, you showed some friendship, you didn't ask for anything, you just wanted to give something. That has a tendency to open people up. But sometimes, depending on the person, it may take longer or shorter depending on the person. Well, someone like that needs personal care. A good friend. Or someone who cares.
Thank you for your inspiring lecture, Maharaj. Just one question. You were talking about serving. Back in time when I was a kid, I was raised, if I do something, I get the people from the opposite side is grateful for that and say thank you and everything. So it's hard for us to serve unconditionally.
Right.
That's the point, I think. So sometimes you just wait for that. Somebody say thank you, or he's very grateful.
Right.
To do something for him.
And it's inspiring.
Yeah. So the thing is how to achieve that stage. Then we don't need any, you know, gratitude from the other side. If you just serve.
Well, like I say, you have to take care of yourself before you can really serve others in a way that is beneficial. But the principle of service is to try to make another person happy or do something that will make them happy. And the principle of life is that when you see another person, you do something that made someone happy, you feel happy. That's called love. Yeah. We do that with people who are close to us. But even in general, when we don't see any division between people according to their, you know, lifestyle or their gender or like that. So just like at devotees, well, they'll see if they're out there distributing books. When someone takes a book, hey, they feel really happy. Not because they sold the book, but because they know this person's they're on their way now to get Krishna's mercy. So they feel happy about that. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to serve in such a way as to bring people closer to Krishna. As they come closer to Krishna, they become more and more happy. They become more and more themselves. But if you're in a situation where you're doing service and someone else is not appreciating or not even acknowledging your service, you become kind of discouraged and you think you move on to somewhere else. That means you might think, well, maybe the service I'm doing they don't really want. Or they're just so self-centered that they don't care. But there are thousands of people who do care. So sometimes we don't waste time with that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Anything else? Another question somewhere? Ladies? Ladies are quiet today. Okay. Oh, yes. I forgot your name.
Marcel. Marcel.
Okay. I think I got it. But I'm sure it's a nice name. Okay.
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, how can we really get absorbed in desire to serve others? So if there are some thoughts or some feelings that are impeding our desire to serve others, either it be like some metaphors or some selfish thoughts, how can we like put that all aside and really get involved in desire to serve others?
Well, when you actually do it, you feel good. You get past that mental block. As a mind may find reasons why you shouldn't, or what are you going to get out of it, or maybe you don't know how. Sometimes you just have to do it. But that's why in Krishna consciousness it's easy, because you can give prasadam to somebody, that's nice service. You can give people a gift, that's service. You can tell people about Krishna, that's service. There's so many ways that are beneficial. Even if you can't think of, you know, a practical way. But these are also practical and are also spiritual too. Like one time somebody gave me a beautiful picture of Lord Nrsingadev from Mayapur. And it was just like, it was a mystical picture, really beautiful. So I had it, and it was one of my favorite pictures. And then after some time, I couldn't locate it anymore. And then one day I was thought about finding that picture, and I searched everywhere in my room, couldn't find it. I couldn't find it, so I gave up. Then one day I just happened to open up one of my books in my shelf, and the picture was inside the book. And as soon as I saw the picture, it wasn't so much that I was happy to find the picture, but my experience was I remembered the devotee who gave me the picture. I remembered the devotee. And then I started feeling that same affection that was there when he gave me the picture. It was very friendly when he offered me that picture. And then a couple of years later, which was about a year or two ago, I met him for the first time after about 15 years. I said, "You remember that picture you gave me? I still got it." So it was nice. So this is, you know, by giving gifts, the gift is a reminder of the person who gave it to you. And that's one of the ways to exchange love in Krishna consciousness, giving gifts, giving prasad. Okay, so okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.